When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.
It is May 4th, 2021, and the road that they walk on is paved in gold. This is the Wrestling Inc. podcast. I'm Glenn Rubenstein. I don't know why I'm saying my name like that. Joined by Alfred Kanawa and comedian Mike Lawrence joining us tonight on the podcast to talk about NXT on USA. Mike, welcome to the podcast.
Thanks for having me.
Yeah, so that was a surprising victory, I thought, in the main event. Women's tag match. Good to see Candice and Indy getting those titles.
Yeah. Yeah, I liked it. I'm still more intrigued by the dog pooping on Shotzi's tank. I think that ruined her morale going into it. And so I think the real feud is with, was it Frankie Monet and the dog? So I think they might be tag champs soon.
Yeah, that's some main event material right there, literally. I think next week, we can see Shotzi versus Frankie. Frankie going over.
Yeah, seriously, who books this shit?
Yes. But yet, better than any storyline in recent memory on Monday Night Raw.
I mean, I feel like that's where they get the storylines from.
Yes.
This is exactly what they would be doing with Shotzi if she was on Raw. This was such a WWE Raw segment on NXT. Like, it feels like that's the first thing Vince McMahon would want to do with that tank if he saw a dog near it.
How come we don't have pets more on the main roster?
I feel like because a lot of drug addicts were trusted with them and they died.
Oh, that's true.
You know, like that's the crazy thing. We gave people pets when they weren't even good with their children. Like, hey, Jake the Snake, you can't care for your daughter.
I mean, I don't know. You know, Baron Corbin seems like a ferret guy if I've ever seen one.
Oh, yeah.
Yeah. Like the kind of guy just like wears it around his neck.
And you know it's named after like an ex that he says he's over, but he's clearly not.
Yeah, that's a gimmick.
When you said Baron Corbin seems like a fair guy, I took it a completely different way. I was just like, it's a bit of an extreme accusation there, but I guess.
No, a fair, like people that don't care.
Yeah, now I know. Yeah, now I can see it.
I don't even know what the slang you're referring to is. I'm going to have to go to Urban Dictionary, look some stuff up. Broaden my vocabulary a little bit, Alfred. But this was a good show tonight. I mean, look, NXT is welcome. It's always a lovely Tuesday evening. Opening tonight with the Falls Count Anywhere match, Leon Ruff versus Isaiah Swerve Scott. Banger of a match. Really just intense from start to finish. Great way to open the show. Mike, what did you think of this?
This is awesome. Ruff is like the perfect ragdoll. Like Swerve is like great at just clobbering him. It's a great feud. I think the problem when you have a screwy finish with the AJ Francis, which what a terrible name that is.
It is bad, yes.
When your last name is just the guy who stole Pee-wee's bicycle. that doesn't help. And I think like I really liked it, but now that you add that guy in, it's like, because they felt like this was the blow off, but now it doesn't feel like it is, because it feels like Francis will be this mini boss and then Ruff will go against Swerve again. I thought it was good. I mean, it was weird to me structurally, if we want to talk the whole show, in the sense that the opening and the end was a little odd to me.
Oh, yeah.
But yeah. I thought, this was really well worked. The last thing I'll say, a lot of the best stuff was in the picture in picture, which was weird. Like Leon Ruff took like some really, you know, brutal spots, like got thrown into a locker. All the backstage stuff was picture in picture. And maybe, I don't know if this is a hot take, a warm take. I don't like the picture in picture. I would rather they just go to commercial and then come back. Like, yeah. I think that it trains the audience to not care as much. And like Ruff was literally taking these brutal spots for nothing. Like while we were watching Ric Flair talk about car shields.
And they could have trolled the audience and just gone to commercial and come back with the aftermath, staged it, and be like, oh my God, you just missed the most brutal move ever.
Yeah, and then show like a replay or something. But the way they did it, it's just, I don't know. Like, I mean, I watch Dynamite every week, and I don't really count the picture in picture as part of the matches. Like,
Alfred, what do you think?
Yeah, and it does miss a lot if you don't get the commentary either. Like, the match completely loses what I think is probably its most important tool. Is if you just see them on mute, like, even if they are doing crazy moves, you kind of lose something if nobody's reacting to it or they don't set it up with some kind of commentary. But it was really a weird match structurally because you would have never been able to tell that it was a Falls Count Anywhere based on the first half of the match. And they didn't do anything to make you want to stay around to see what kind of crazy stuff they do. But thankfully, when they came back from it, that's when you saw the toolbox and all the stuff they were doing on the outside, which they had some crazy exchanges that I really like how these two work together. And I like that Swerve Scott finally has a stable now, because he's this gimmick that he's doing kind of needs it, where he's being this kind of studio rapper, but you can't just come out by yourself. That's not really the rapper gimmick. You got to have an entourage going.
Yeah. I mean, how soon are they going to bring Oscar back from Men on a Mission? You know, it's coming. You know,
yeah. Oh man,
like, you know, like what Vince's like view of hip hop history is. Can we get PN News?
Combo Breaker Buck 99 saying Swerve had murder on his mind with the toolbox. How much more versed? I mean, I'm assuming anything is more like Triple H and the NXT storytellers have to be at least moderately versed in hip hop. Compared to Vince McMahon, who the last rap record he probably bought was Chubby Checker and the Fat Boys doing the twist.
And that was last week.
Yeah, true. So we'll see. But
I think WWE aggression, but yeah.
Yeah. Oh, man. You got to think maybe Vince pitched an angle at some point. Like, I'm going to put out a diss track. You know,
what if the only rap album he's heard from start to finish is Randy Savage's Be a Man?
I was just thinking about that one too.
I worked as a researcher on that Randy doc that just aired. That was one of the funnest things I've ever done in my life. Just watching and talking about Randy Savage and stuff. And God, we could have done so much more on Be a Man.
Yeah, I love the documentary, by the way. I think they've been really good on A&E, and I was surprised with how much they really kind of got into his, the darkness of his past. You guys did a great job with that doc.
And it was fun, like research, you know, I say research, like he came over to my place and I showed him the Jake and Savage feud from 91 and stuff like that. It's like, that's not work. That's fun. Talking to him about Gorgeous George and everything. It's, you know, like Billy needs to find the Florida and everything that he makes. And that's very easy with pro wrestling.
Yeah.
I say pro wrestling is the Florida of sports.
There you go. Due to interference, Isaiah Swerve Scott won this match due to the interference by AJ Francis. Can we have another AJ? I feel like...
Yeah, and that's his real name, I think. They didn't even bother to give him like a BJ Francis or something.
Do you think that they should incorporate his like WWE Treasures hosting into this gimmick? Because it is weird to see him be this like happy, fun host on A&E and then like this tough, like, you know, bruiser guy. Here, like, I would love if he like has different like rare objects that he uses to like beat people up with and shit. Like, he has to take it out of the case and then put it back in.
He's got Randy's scepter. He's going to use it.
Or, you know, like he steals something from everybody. Like he's a collector. Like when he beats you.
That's good.
You know, he takes something from you.
They had, what was it? Yeah, PCO was doing a gimmick like that in the 90s when he feuded with Bret Hart and he took Bret Hart's leather jacket. I think
that's
it was
Jean-Pierre Lafitte.
I always thought that was a badass gimmick.
Yeah,
that's who it was, yeah.
Yeah, and one of the things that he did, which is such an amazing heel thing, he would take the kid's glasses from the front row.
Yeah, and the kid would be bawling, crying, and they just get it on camera.
But they would turn out to be like a wrestler's son. Like, wow, I notice all those kids were Samoan.
Yeah, he's such a babyface on that A&E show.
Yeah.
Yeah, that's what I kept thinking. It's like, how are we going to take this guy serious as a heavy if he's just like such a gregarious, likable person, you know, on a show that I think more people, or just as many people watch that show, I think, as NXT, but I might be thinking of the documentary, but I think a lot of people are going to kind of confuse the two characters and have a hard time taking him seriously.
Yeah, well, 55-year-olds watch A&E and 55-year-olds watch NXT.
It's crazy. Remember when A&E was like I'm going to watch a taped stage version of Death of a Salesman and then maybe some old episodes of Masterpiece Theater. Like, what has A&E become? You know, just like the slow, steady decline over the last 40 years. That now it's like wrestling documentaries and, like Storage Wars ripoffs. Asher Hale versus Cameron Grimes tonight. Asher Hale is the former Anthony Henry. So they kept the initials. But yeah, Grimes won this match. But the real Grimes story we saw later. Let's talk about, I love
Grimes.
Oh, so good. So good.
He's a guy that when he's not on the show suffers. So he gets his gimmick. He's so fun. Like, it's the rare case of a relevant gimmick, you know? Like, it's genuinely, like, of today. And he's just, yeah, I mean, he's better than this show is.
Yeah, he's good.
Yeah, Cameron Grimes, he's of that mold of, like, the people's champion in terms of his momentum right now. Like, there's always one wrestler in WWE who's, like, so much better than how he's pushed and fans get behind him for a period of time. Like Damian Mizdow was that guy for a while, Heath Slater. I think Cameron Grimes, if we had crowds right now, would be getting such undeniable reactions and they'd have no choice but to really push him. And it sounds like they're doing a lot with him now because he got a squash match win and they did something with Ted DiBiase again. And I really like that they're kind of getting behind this character because it's very entertaining.
Yeah, he's good. Let's talk about the Grizzly Young Veterans versus Tommaso Ciampa and Timothy Thatcher tonight, with Ciampa and Thatcher getting a win. Alfred, what did you think of this match?
I thought it was fine. I just think, and I've said this before about these guys, like I like each of these individually, but this just seems like two of the same gimmick feuding with each other. I feel like we're just seeing so much of the same thing. They both wrestle the same pace. They both got that gimmick where it's like younger guys, but they wrestle an old school style, which is cool. But if you mix it with something that's different, that I think meshes better. This is just, it seems like 40s wrestling when I watch this sometimes, even though they do know what they're doing in there. It just doesn't keep my attention.
Yeah, Mike.
Yeah, I mean, I think it's like, you know, this is what's great about NXT, and this is also what's missable about NXT. Like, you know that NXT, it's like, it's interesting now that it's no longer competing with AEW, which what it really that does, thankfully for them, is it allows them to not be compared to AEW anymore. Yeah. Because the thing is, like, what I always thought when they were against each other is, you know, I always thought like AEW always had like the best segment of the week and the worst segment. Mm. And NXT is at a much more even level. You know, like, you know, you're going to get at least one or two good matches. You know, you're going to get some in-ring promos where people get interrupted. Spoiler alert. Like, you know, the trappings of what, like, NXT is, and it's ever reliable. And this match was like one of those where like this could be on every week. Maybe it is. And it's fine.
Yeah, I feel like this match, this is you're speaking of these A&E documentaries. This reminded me of like the modern version of when I used to be flipping channels and I would see wrestling and I'd be like, this seems really involved and interesting, but it's just not grabbing me. Yeah. Like, which is what TBS wrestling was to me my entire time growing up. Every time I'd flip past early WCW.
That is what this felt like.
Oh, sorry. Go on, Alfred.
No, I was just saying that's a great comparison. That's exactly what this felt like.
Well, you know, it's like a tale of two like styles, right? Like, you know that the Cameron Grimes match is a squash match, but sure. It's full of character work and gimmickry, and it's entertaining. And so it's like, I'm an 80s, 90s wrestling fan, you know, I'm sure we all are, but that's what I gravitate to. So I'd rather watch something like that than this, where it feels more technical than shoot fighty. Like my thing with wrestling, when wrestling gets too technical, it's like MMA, if I want to see people hurt each other.
Yeah.
You know,
no, absolutely.
What I want to see is redneck billionaires.
Characters, man, characters and story. I mean, so we talk about this a lot on the podcast, Mike, is that great wrestling is so ubiquitous now that it's almost background. And it's really about characters and storyline, because ultimately this is a TV show. If we wanted to watch sports, we would watch sports.
Yeah, and the characters and the storylines are always what's going to be hot when wrestling is at its hottest. People don't remember, like, I talked to a lot of lapsed fans who used to watch wrestling, some of my friends who don't watch it anymore. The things they remember are the great storylines and characters. They never say, oh, man, I remember when so-and-so had a great match. They'll say, I remember Ted DiBiase or The Ultimate Warrior or something that stuck with them in terms of a character.
Yeah, and you look at, like, even, like, the WWE packaging of its own nostalgia. It isn't matches. It's, you know, it's pieces in a match. It's, you know, like Hogan versus Andre is nothing compared to Hogan slamming. You don't need to watch the rest of the match. Like, that's all you need.
Well, and piggybacking off that, when they talked about the Savage Steamboat match from WrestleMania, what did they always talk about when they talk about a great match? The story they told in the ring.
Yeah. Yeah.
And I feel like we lose sight of that. You know, tonight the big turn being that, or the big wrinkle being that Thatcher used Wade Barrett's shoe to hit Gibson in the face. Like, I don't know that I don't think we're going to be looking back at a retrospective on that moment 40 years from now.
Yeah, and it's funny too with, you know, the Savage Steamboat thing, to just jump on that for a sec. Yeah. You know, when we were like, you know, like when I was working on the Savage doc, it's so interesting that, you know, some people even to his detriment would talk about how he would over prepare matches. Mm-hmm. And, you know, like it's like a knock on Savage at times, when what he really did, I thought, was utilize the uniqueness of the art form.
Yeah.
Like it is predetermined. So predetermine the hell out of it. It's like, you know, Alfred, when you were saying like all these great matches are interchangeable now, it is like there are so many guys that have been trained a certain way that they could just go out there for 20 minutes and, you know, move after move, you know, call this a great whatever has become definition of a great match in the ring, but it's not memorable.
Exactly. You know?
It's like the true great, like, I mean, to me, it's like I'm an Orange Cassidy fan because everything else, like when I saw the Revolution pay-per-view last year, him against Pac really stuck out to me because it was the most clear-cut heel and baby face dynamic on the show.
Yeah, no, and we've you know, when I was covering AEW, I mean, we were talking about like Darby Allin. I don't care if it's a wrestling show, a reality show, cast him in a zombie apocalypse series, you know, that character I will watch. Whatever format you want to put him in, because he's so darn compelling.
Yeah, and he's the hottest guy in AEW right now in terms of the ratings. He's the guy that they're main eventing right now, and a lot of that is his character and that kind of charisma, that quiet ambiance that he's got about him.
Yeah. It's not, I mean, the storylines are okay. I mean, we had Gargano upset, you know, trying to get a hold of Regal, talking about Bronson Reed earning another North American title shot. It was cool to see Swerve with his entourage. after, you know, kind of gloating about beating Leon Ruff. And then we had Karrion Kross come out to the ring, NXT champion Karrion Kross with Scarlett. And this promo was, oh man, I mean, this is what they do to death, right? Where it's like, and then O'Reilly comes out, and then Dunn comes out, and then Balor comes out, and we just keep interrupting and interrupting. So I don't know. I mean, what did you think of this, Alfred, and where do you think they go from here?
This was awful. I thought this was, it's almost like they sat in a room and was like, okay, how do we make Karrion Kross look as normal as possible? Yeah. Let's do what we do with everybody. Let's have him cut the promo, and he's got his little, that vest was awful. That like casino dealer vest that he had. Like, what happened to the other? He was like a Roman Empire emperor the last time. But it's just, I thought it was horrible. I didn't like the fact that we talked about this before when he cut a promo after he won that title, is that it's like this character really relies on its like mystique. And that was completely blown asunder. And I have no problem with Karrion Kross. Whenever they decide to lay him out, that's fine. But I mean, Johnny Gargano, even though he's a main event caliber wrestler, he is a comedy wrestler right now. Him and Austin Theory are doing straight up comedy every week. Those are not the guys, especially Johnny Gargano, who's like half Austin or Karrion Kross's size. If this is your OP killer, the fact that they laid him out, does anybody think that Austin Theory is going to beat Karrion Kross next week, or that's going to be competitive? I don't know what the demand was to have them lay him out, but I just thought this was a disaster all the way around.
Yeah, this type of promo I was sick of 15 years ago. It doesn't help. It doesn't make anybody. It'd be just because it's one guy after the other guy after the other guy. I mean, you know, I guess the positive is it lets you forget how lame Kyle O'Reilly is because he went first. His character, it's like just guy going a divorce and acting like he's okay with it, but he's still, you know, like he's the Kurt Van Houten of wrestling right now. Like, I want him to have like "Can I Borrow a Feeling" t-shirts, like, because it's just really sad. And it's, you know, he came out of this, you know, it was the main event of a two-night NXT, him against Cole, and now he's this goofball that, like, just the guy that quotes, you know, the first Borat to you still.
Oh yeah.
It's just cringy. It's and then you have like Pete Dunne after that, who's like so serious that it's funny, and then Finn, who's kind of good but can't save it, and Karrion's got Scarlett for a reason. That guy shouldn't really talk. It's just, you know, you have, do these 1 minute, 2 minute promos. Do that's like the best guys ever weren't 10, 15 minutes. All of your memorable promos. Terrible sentence. You know, wallowing in the muck of avarice, Jake the Snake was a minute and a half. But putting these guys out there to just meander is not, it doesn't help anybody. And then, yeah, and then you have them all like, I should get the title, I should get the title. And then these two other guys who have no connection with those guys end up beating up Kross. It's like, okay.
Yeah. And just all the fighting in the ring tonight, I don't know. I mean, so this is going to go, Kross is going to defeat, I mean, it's going to be Balor versus Kross, the rematch at the next TakeOver, right? You don't think they're going to be crazy enough to do a fatal four-way?
I mean, I don't know why you book a segment like that if that's not the direction. I'm pretty sure, I feel like they would do a fatal four. I mean, I know at some point they're going to do Karrion Kross versus Kyle O'Reilly, but now that I see how this segment went, maybe they just started that so that they can get to this point where now we have a fatal four-way possibly.
I think, you know, the one positive I'll say about this is placement. I'm glad that they opened with Swerve. And Ruff, even if it ended with the heel winning, I mean, that's fine. Who cares? Because this is the kind of segment that often opens a WWE show, and it really sours you on wanting to be in the show. Yeah. And so it being an hour in, like, I think Ruff and Swerve, I'm giving a big compliment to NXT here, started at, like, exactly 8:02. And, like, that's what should happen. Like, boom, here's wrestling, here's these guys. They showed a little video package because I think this would have really bummed us all out. Like, I don't think we would watch the rest unless we had to talk about it.
Yeah. We'll see. Zeta Ramir versus Saray tonight. Good match, but I don't know. I have trouble getting invested when they shake hands at the beginning and they're like cordial to each other at the end.
Yeah, I mean, there's too many women in NXT that all shop at the same Hot Topic.
Well,
like, was it Zeta Ramir? Like, they all like look like they were in Tank Girl, like that they bought front row tickets to the Thunderdome, where they're kind of gothy but not really. This, you know, match wise, it was fine. You know, Saray's good. Like I said, I'm a person, like, I like a good squash sometimes, and I thought that this was almost too competitive if the point was to just make Saray a star.
Yeah. Alfred?
Yeah, I mean, I really, really like Saray, and I thought this was a fine match. I want to see her against different opponents. I just thought Zeta was a little – I mean, she's still very new, and she had a couple of scary spots toward the end where she laid on her neck a couple of times. But I thought Saray is just really good at, like, controlling the crowd. And 2 weeks in terms of her being able to connect with people in the ring, I think that's, like, the best thing that she does, which goes very far in WWE. Is she's just got such a great personality in the ring, and she knows exactly how to work the crowd. So I really enjoy seeing Saray. I think they've got something in her.
I think they're both super talented, but this goes back – this was, like, the equivalent of the Grizzled Young Vets and Ciampa match. You know, where it was like, okay, this was good sportsmanlike conduct. Both women are very athletic. They put on a very good match. I think they both have interesting characters, but this was just sort of no stakes. Just, you know, it was there.
Yeah.
You know, I think.
Yeah, absolutely. It was, I mean, it was supposed to be a showcase of Saray, but I didn't really get that. I just got, and that speaks to Mike's point about it being so competitive. It's like, you know, that they've been talking to you about this woman who's coming in from Japan. They've been telling us for months now. And 2 weeks in, both of her matches have been super competitive. And it's like, if you think about this like a real, like MMA, if you promote some guy as being a killer and it takes him like five rounds to knock out his first opponent, you're going to be like, well, this guy isn't all that good. I'm not going to pay pay-per-view money to see this guy fight.
I think what they think is that it's more impressive to watch somebody kick out at two and kick out of like finishers in a squash than to just squash somebody. Like, yeah. You know, I remember there was a Dynamite like a few months ago, and Paige, I think it was like Paige versus Benoni, and he like, you know, clotheslined him and, you know, Lariat like beat the crap out of him in a minute and a half. And then there was like a Moxley match on the same show that was like back and forth 10 minutes with the guy that wasn't at his level. And I'm like, give me the Paige match, because he looks more like what competitive is. It's like, we want to see dominance sometimes.
Yeah.
And then we went to this Imperium backstage talking to Walter via video call. Not happy with what happens as of late. It is what it is. Like, has Imperium been interesting in the last year?
No, nothing without Walter, that's for sure. I mean, they've had some solid matches. I just kind of think, you know, Walter's another guy like that he's this like legit tough guy. And I don't know what it was. Seeing him on that iPod, it was just like his dad on a Zoom call. Like, it just took away all this tough guy. I would have rather them do like a POV where they're talking to Walter and he's maybe sitting in some lair. But I just don't like the whole, it seems lazy to do the Zoom call thing.
Yeah, like Hitler in the bunker is intimidating. But Hitler, like, doing that downfall speech on a Zoom call just doesn't have the same oomph to it. You know? I mean, I'm Jewish, but, like, whatever I see, Walter, I think that guy killed some of my family. He's terrifying. But he really – yeah, what's the story here? That he's just not there because he had to go back? Like, he needs to be there if those guys are on TV, like you said. Alfred, like, they do not need to exist without him.
Yeah, he's the Justin Timberlake of Imperium. And maybe he's secretly doing a solo album with the Neptunes, and that's why he doesn't appear.
Because they're not even like Bebop and Rocksteady. They're just like 3 Foot Clan guys.
Yeah. Yeah, they're very interchangeable. I struggle to, you know, kind of tell them apart which one is which.
We got the vignette for the Diamond Mine. People insisting this is not Tessa Blanchard, which makes me think it is Tessa Blanchard. More people deny. I don't know. It'll probably be disappointing. Guesses? Yeah. Anything? Alfred, guess? Diamond Mine?
It seems MMA influenced.
Okay. Mike, well, who's your money on?
I don't.
It seems like it might have something to do with MMA. Like, maybe it has something to do with Arturo Juarez.
You know what? I already think that LA Knight isn't working, so he's already going to come out as a different character. He's just doing other vignettes. Like, he's going to be like two guys on the same show, and then whatever works, works.
You shall see.
I mean, he is it.
So, LA Knight versus Jake Atlas. What's up with Jake Atlas? I saw Jake Atlas wrestle here in the Bay Area many times. I was so excited when he got signed to WWE, and just LA Knight's out there beating him easily.
Here's tonight. The sample size. It's funny. I saw Jake Atlas wrestle several times in PWG, and I can't tell you how many times he was on a card where nobody knew who the hell he was, and he'd have probably the best match on the show. Mm-hmm. And these are shows with like the Young Bucks on him and stuff like that. And this match to me felt like what wrestling used to be versus what wrestling could be. Like, you've got LA Knight, who's just ain't it. Like, he's doing this gimmick that's an impression of an Attitude Era wrestler versus this guy who's a legitimately great wrestler, LGBTQ, like an opportunity that WWE's never really had to kind of promote and reach out a new audience. And they just have the old style, you know, Rock Jr. win the match.
Yeah, my favorite was when LA Knight was doing the joke about, you know, they're going to need an Atlas to find you. And then he just goes, ha-ha! When he laughed at his own joke because nobody else did. I mean, I've been there. I'm a stand-up. I've bombed on stage and been like, ha-ha! this is weird because I think that Eli Drake is talented. But what he's doing right now is an impression and not an actual character. And it just feels weird. It feels disingenuous. And yeah, I saw Jake Atlas against Jungle Boy, I want to say in 2019 at the Battle of Los Angeles, and it was amazing. And he had the rainbow flag shorts. Like, people were really into it. I think that is genuinely important. although I will say, maybe not a good idea if he is going to get squashed. But I think, it was weird to me of like all the actual squashes on this show that Jake Atlas is the guy that you squash, and, you know, LA Knight is the guy you give a decisive win to, because I feel like LA Knight like started at the mid card and there's nowhere to go but down.
Yeah, I don't see LA Knight being the one to dethrone Karrion Kross.
Yeah, I mean, I look at, like, you know, what I watched the first few Powers, the WA, and, you know, AEW definitely got the best ones there of Kingston, Starks, and Thunder Rosa. Like, Eli Drake was like, oh, this guy's not bad, but he's definitely not at the league of the three talents I just mentioned.
I could see North American Championship. Sorry, Alfred.
That's a good point. Now they got their bang out of their buck in terms of those talents, because those guys are all overachieving in AEW.
Yeah. Yeah. And they're all something that they didn't have already. And it's like, that's the thing with LA Knight, is like, what is he? Because even if the thing is a throwback character, it's like, well, Grimes is doing that much better.
Yeah.
I got a promo from Tony Storm on Zoe Stark. That was pretty cool. We had a promo Legado del Fantasma out in the ring. For a second, I was like, is this a face turn? What's going on here? I was really digging this promo. And then interrupted by Kushida. So we'll see how that continues. Let's talk about this interview with Mercedes Martinez and NXT Women's Champion Raquel Gonzalez. So, I mean, this seems like, are they going to face, sorry, I'm just trying to remember at the end of this. I mean, this seems like a huge takeover match, but are they going to get it done before then?
Yeah, getting next week. Yeah.
And Kushida and Santos is what, 2 out of 3 falls?
Yeah.
So they set up both of those. Yeah.
Yeah.
I like that they're giving us big matches on Tuesdays, but man, I don't know. This is like across. Just Mercedes versus Raquel screams takeover match.
It does. Yeah, I think they're doing a good job with both of them in terms of making them look tough. I thought this was really good. I didn't like that they just kind of threw to this like it was going to be – like I was not expecting it to be what it was because they just finished one segment and immediately went to the other one. But, you know, seeing how they did the overrun, I kind of know why. But I thought this was very good in terms of them just building them both up as tough women who want to fight each other. And, you know, they're both very credible. So I think this is going to have a good match.
What I really wanted to see was the cameraman to pan out and you see that they're actually next to each other the whole time. That's what it felt like. No, this was fun. I mean, yeah, it's sometimes the best stories are I'm going to beat you. No, you're not. I'm going to win. Like it was so funny because they were like ice skating around the word old. They said everything but old. And it's like, you know, Raquel's kind of a heel anyway. Just let her call her old because she was like, you're more experienced. You've been doing this a long time. Like, just say you're old and I'm young. Like,
you were born in an era before the internet was prevalent.
Yeah, you're going to die sooner and not just because pro wrestling.
I think there might be a reasoning to that because I didn't notice that too. Maybe it's just like Mickie James right now has been talking a lot about ageism in WWE. So I think a segment like this would just cause Twitter to get riled up. Like, wait a minute. Look, there they are calling women old again. But I did notice they were really dancing around that word. But having said that, you got Raquel, what's her name? Mercedes Martinez. She's in her 40s. Shayna Baszler's in her 40s. Asuka's almost there. Natalya and Tamina, there's a lot of women in their 40s that I think are in prominent spots right now. So maybe the whole ageism thing, I think it's a little overblown.
Yeah, I mean, and I say that if Raquel does beat Mercedes, she gets to put her in a garbage bag and send her back to her family.
I mean, that would be great. I mean, you got to book this. I hope they're listening to this. I want to see that now.
Lean into it. You're terrible to your employees. Oh, wait, you don't even consider them employees. Lean into it.
So we got that Cameron Grimes scene trying to get into a club, but the Million Dollar Man bought the whole club. Who's Ted DiBiase going to back? Who's the talent Ted DiBiase is going to have? Is it going to be the diamond mine? Think about the money, diamonds.
I love this. I love this so much. Ted looks great. Like he looks really, I mean, there's something about when, like, I'll use the word older wrestlers. I mean, he's in his 60s, except that they look older. You know, yeah. I remember like one of the interviews that I wasn't there for a lot of the Savage interviews, but I was there for Honky Tonk Man. And it was the weekend. I think we taped it when he was going into the Hall of Fame. And so he was all, you know, full honkied out. And when you saw how old his face looks under that really jet black dyed hair, it was like, and then have you seen him recently where he just like grew his hair out white and everything? It looks awesome. You know, like old wrestlers look cool because they're just like these, you know, they're grizzled old veterans. They're these just bitter guys who look like they pee chewing tobacco. Like, and Ted DiBiase, like, has that, like, vibe, you know, yeah, my son's gone through some IRS scandals, and I don't mean Rotunda, if you catch my drift. and him buying the club, yeah, I mean, it's just great. And it's like, and the way that they're doing it, it's almost like, it feels like Cameron Grimes is just imagining Ted DiBiase there.
Yeah.
Oh, wow. Like,
only he can see him and nobody else can. It's really funny to me. It's like
this whole time he's just been buying everything with Monopoly money and he's not even really rich.
But a lot of like wrestling comedy doesn't work. And I mean, I am a mark for Grimes, but this really worked for me. It was fun and silly and it was really entertaining.
Yeah, and Glenn, you're asking who the guy should be that Ted DiBiase backs. I really hope it ends up being Cameron Grimes. I mean, I hope he gets maybe somebody who initially he's going to back, and then he turns on him, because I do think that these two together, you know, you don't want to overdo the Ted DiBiase thing, but I think this would be the credibility that Cameron Grimes needs to start to really get taken seriously as a wrestler, too.
Okay.
Yeah. And I mean, the one thing I could really, like, the best compliment I could give Grimes is that if he was in that 9 o'clock promo segment, he would have at least stuck out more than the performers that were there.
Yeah. Okay. And the main event tonight, street fight for the NXT Women's Tag Team titles, The Way, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell versus Ember Moon and Shotzi Blackheart. Before the match, Frankie Monet's dog made a mess of Ember and Shotzi's tank. So they went out in their Freddie and Jason inspired gear, had a banger of a match, tables, ladders, a lot of intensity and brutality, but ultimately the new NXT Women's Tag Team Champions are The Way, Candice LeRae and Indy Hartwell. Alfred, to you first. What did you think of this match?
I mean, I thought it was an exciting match. There was a lot of miscues, basically because, like, the tables weren't breaking, and there was a thing with the ladder where Candice almost fell on her face. But I really thought they worked very hard, and I was pleasantly surprised by the fact that Indy and Candice are now the tag team champions, because, you know, this wave thing, they could use a little more steam in terms of them actually winning matches instead of just being comedy people who just always lose. So it's fine. I just like the fact, I think it's hilarious that between Candice and Indy, their gimmick is basically Candice is gaslighting Indy. Like, to the most literal, like, the way they describe, we use gaslighting a certain way now, but that came from this 40s movie where the guy was kind of flickering the lights and telling his wife that, no, you're not seeing anything. And she ends up going crazy. That's what's happening with this angle, is that she's seeing Dexter Lumis, but Candice keeps going, no, Dexter who? Who are you seeing? And that's the essentially the story they're telling. So the tag team champions, congratulations.
This is fun. I mean, once again, yeah, like, the first match being false count anywhere, and then this being a street fight, it just felt like agents didn't know each other. Like, I thought these were both, you know, the opener and this, like, bookended the show nicely. I just wouldn't have had it on the same show. But I thought it was great. You know, the way it was, you offered, I think it was like they're basically comedy characters.
Yeah.
You kind of, and I know that Johnny's got the gold. Like, stables just work better when there's multiple title holders. It's just a cool visual, and it adds to it. It kind of fits Austin Theory to be the one person without one. Like, and I think they're going too early with the cross thing, because you have a really great story, if you want, of he feels left out. The only other title that he can get is, you know, he can either, like, you know, try to get the cruiserweight title or something. Like, I guess maybe he's the right weight, but it'd be funny if he wasn't. Yeah. But, like, if he has to go after Karrion Kross, he wants to, he feels weird being the only person not having a title. Like, put that match off a couple of weeks.
Yeah, that's a solid filler feud to have in between takeovers.
It is fun because Austin Theory is such a great. And being, like, that goofball that wants to fit in kind of works for him. But I thought that this was good. This is plundery. And, you know, have them as your champs, and champs are fun. And I think there's a lot of good stuff coming from this. I don't know what they do with Monet, but it'd be funny if – I mean – like, Shotzi and Ember look like they would just kill the dog.
Especially the way Shotzi was dressed tonight. She was basically Freddy Krueger. I can see her doing it now.
There you go.
Yeah, but this was, this was a fun show. Like all you ask from wrestling, especially WWE wrestling, is just don't insult me. And this did not. And so do we have star ratings? If not, I'd give the show like a perfect 3 out of 5.
Yeah, it was good. I almost wonder if they're stacking these too much too soon in the run, to where it's going to draw an audience in the short term, but just set an impossible bar to keep this pace of having two takeover level matches every Tuesday. You know?
Yeah. I mean, they have a lot of high quality, you know, kind of, we were talking about the wrestling that they have, but NXT does a very consistent job, I think, of putting on really good some of WWE's best matches that you're going to see all week on any show.
Absolutely. But I think it's almost too much of a good thing at a certain
point. Yeah.
You know?
Yeah. I mean, I think that's fine. It's also, is the next takeover SummerSlam?
No, I think there's one next month, I want to say.
Okay, so yeah, they do have to pace it a little better then, but I think so. At least, I don't know how much of this is them wanting to appeal to USA and getting those big ratings, but I mean, I'm okay with it if you're also building other talent, and I think the show did a good job of that. The fact that we have some directions and all of that, that, you know, I'm excited to see where Swerve and his group go. I'm excited to see, yeah, the way as these tag champs. So, I mean, it made me want to watch again. And the fact, I like that they set up matches next week. It's such a weird thing to compliment, but it doesn't happen that much in WWE all the time. But at the end of a wrestling show, if they say, this is what you're going to see next week, and there's like two or three things you really want to see, then they did their job.
Yeah, I agree with that.
And they didn't do that 2 weeks ago, and they drew their worst rating, you know, of these 3 weeks. They had their audience fall off 100,000. So I think one of the reasons that they did promote so hard is because now they're in this mode, like, holy crap, let's tell them what they're going to see so hopefully our numbers can remain above 800,000.
And I think, you know, give them real credit, like, the fact that they're trusting all sorts of things in these key positions, that a women's tag can be your main event. That, you know, that you can have a cruiserweight type match as your opener, that you could have like all sorts of stuff. I mean, yeah, we're trained to think that rambly promo segment has to open every show and set up a match that ends every show. But I like the variety of it. And I think it's smart to do that as opposed to relying so much on one part of the division.
Right.
Yeah. There you have it. Alfred, final thoughts on tonight?
I thought it was a up and down show, but more good than bad on this show, I thought. I like the fact that they're, you know, progressing toward.
We lost Alfred. Mike, final thoughts on tonight's show?
Yeah, I said I thought it was good. It was fun. And I wish I had more to make fun of, you know.
I host
the show Wrestle Roast.
That's right.
I love goofing on bad wrestling. There's not a lot on NXT. It was fine.
It's a very good show. It's funny because I agree. Sometimes what makes the podcast so entertaining and what people like is that shared misery. And when you have something really good, there's only so many ways you can compliment something and talk about it.
You know, when you have something extraordinary, you can gush about it in different ways. Sure. If you have something terrible, you could crap on it in different ways. When something's like straight down the middle, 7 out of 10 pins like this show was, I don't feel like we can be as entertaining as we want to be.
Yeah, it wasn't a horrible show. Sorry for leaving the podcast. I don't know if my connection cut out or whatnot, but you know, I'm back now. Yeah, it was a slightly above average show.
I just describe it now where I'm moving in Las Vegas. If I want to, I can order and get delivered Del Taco every night. I love Del Taco, but maybe every night it loses its specialness and I cannot quite rave about it so much if I am just having the food that I love all the time.
Well, that's funny because the same people who order Del Taco every night are definitely the same people who watch NXT every week.
Very tight demographic. Very tight demographic. Cool. So, Mike, where can people find you on the interwebs?
Yeah, I'm a co-host of the Wrestle Roast podcast. We roast a different wrestler every week. This week we are roasting the Ultimate Warrior, who is the wrestler that got me into professional wrestling as a kid. He was my guy. I am going to make fun of him for all the Jake Atlases in the world. And then we have a Patreon episode on Saturday. If you're like okay, what weird stuff do you do? We are roasting Dave Meltzer. So that'll be fun. Yeah, I'm watching the movie Rain Man to prepare for that one.
On that note, Mike, where can people direct their angry tweets towards you on the internet?
I'm not on Twitter, mental health reasons, but I am on Instagram at Mike Lawrence Comedy.
There you go. Friday night, me, Alfred, Jackson Callens is coming back Friday night to talk about SmackDown. And tomorrow night, Alfred, you and Justin are covering AEW. So thanks, everyone, for tuning in. Have a great Tuesday. We'll catch you back here next time on the Wrestling Inc. podcast. Take care.
When you need mealtime inspiration, it's worth shopping Kroger, where you'll find over 30,000 mouthwatering choices that excite your inner foodie. And no matter what tasty choice you make, you'll enjoy our everyday low prices, plus extra ways to save, like digital coupons worth over $600 each week. You can also save up to $1 off per gallon at the pump with fuel points. More savings and more inspiring flavors make shopping Kroger worth it every time. Kroger, fresh for everyone. Fuel restrictions apply.